This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Bob Edwards. Since the late 1980s, the U.S. Supreme Court has been known as the Rehnquist Court. During that time, Chief Justice William Rehnquist has in many ways used his considerable influence to make the court more conservative. But in the term that just concluded, attention turned to two other justices, Sandra Day O'Connor and Clarence Thomas. NPR Legal Affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg reports.
For a decade and a half, Justices Sandra Day O'Connor and Anthony Kennedy have been dubbed the swing justices. On a court evenly split on many issues between conservatives and liberals, O'Connor or Kennedy often cast the deciding fifth vote. This term, though, while Kennedy wrote the court's decision invalidating state anti-sodomy laws, the judgment was by a 6-3 vote, and there was no 5-4 case in which Kennedy determined the outcome by joining the court's four more liberal members. In contrast, there were four such cases in which Justice O'Connor cast the fifth vote. Supreme Court advocate Tom Goldstein compiles and analyzes court statistics each term.
Justice O'Connor's importance and influence can't be overstated when every single 5-4 case that's decided at the Supreme Court has her in the majority. It's a sign that you need her vote to win on issues that will affect us for decades and for centuries.
O'Connor's case-specific approach is often criticized as unprincipled, but defended as pragmatic. University of Chicago law professor Dennis Hutchinson notes that O'Connor's method of judging is in some ways a reflection of her background as majority leader of the Arizona State Senate.
She looks, I think, more outwardly from the court, both as a sensitive politician and as a lawyer, than many of the justices do, who tend to think more doctrinally and sometimes with a more limited view.
Indeed, in a book of legal essays published this spring, O'Connor wrote that the Supreme Court is a reactive institution that reflects the consensus of its times. The contrary view on this court is held most explicitly by Justices Antonin Scalia and Clarence Thomas. Though the two voted together more often than any other two members of the court, it was Thomas this term whose voice prompted the most discussion. Berkeley law professor John Yoo.
And I think one thing that this term showed was there was a real shifting of the torch, in a way, from Scalia and Rehnquist to Thomas.
Tom Goldstein agrees.
We are really seeing Justice Thomas emerge with his own voice on the right. While he and Justice Scalia still agree in the result in almost every case, he is very willing to write his own opinions, expressing his own personal views that differ from everyone else on the court. And his emergence really does give an entirely new voice to American law.
A good example of this is in the gay rights case, in which Scalia, Thomas, and Rehnquist dissented. All joined Scalia's dissent, blasting the court majority for, quote, signing on to the so-called homosexual agenda. But Thomas wrote separately to say that in his view, the Texas sodomy law was, quote, uncommonly silly, and that had he been in the Texas legislature, he would have voted to repeal it. Nonetheless, concluded Thomas, as a judge, he could not invalidate the law because, in his view, there is no right to privacy in the Constitution. No Thomas opinion this term, though, caused as much chatter in the legal community as his 31-page dissent in the court's affirmative action ruling. Indeed, his dissent was nearly as long as Justice O'Connor's majority opinion upholding the use of race as a factor in college and university admissions. For Thomas, though, these programs were, quote, nothing more than a facade, a cruel farce of continued racial discrimination that stamped minorities with a badge of inferiority. The majority of blacks admitted to the University of Michigan Law School, wrote Thomas, were there only because of their race, and the policy thus tarred all as undeserving. Thomas's angry rejection of affirmative action seems to many ironic, since he was unquestionably the beneficiary of affirmative action in being admitted first to Holy Cross and later to Yale Law School. Indeed, some would and have said he was nominated to the Supreme Court by the first President Bush in part because of his race. Thomas seemed to address that in his dissent when he said, quote, when blacks take positions in the highest places of government, industry, and academia, it is an open question whether their skin color played a part in their advancement. The question itself is a stigma, he said, and it unfairly marks those blacks who would succeed without discrimination. The Thomas dissent was in stark contrast to Justice O'Connor's statements off the bench that her appointment to the court was due in part to her gender. His dissent was also remarkable for its personal tone of anguish.
Perhaps what you hear is him saying, "I am routinely questioned on my competence, on my deservedness," and that is just a form of benevolent, not so benevolent racism.
Eric Jaffe, a former Thomas law clerk, agrees that an opinion this personal is a rarity for any justice, but he adds,
"There was certainly some need to respond to what I believe were some fairly racist assumptions standing behind both the majority opinion as well as sort of affirmative action programs in general. And the need to answer those come out not as dry, bland legal writing."
Berkeley's Professor Yu is another former Thomas clerk.
It's clear in the opinion he feels, well, the elites are telling me what to think, and I don't agree with them. And I have my own personal experience, which they don't really know about because they're not actually minorities.
Defenders of affirmative action contend that there is an irony to Thomas's dissent, since it is based in large part on his unhappy personal experience. Duke Law Professor James Coleman.
He is basing his analysis on diversity on facts that are exactly the facts that Michigan is trying to avoid when they say that they need a critical mass of minority students so that they're not isolated.
Other critics, like Harvard Law Professor Randall Kennedy, say Thomas's dissent is hypocritical.
Justice Thomas wants to say, you know, let's not pay any attention to racial background, but of course in his own rhetoric, he constantly plays upon his own racial background.
Kennedy, who has written ambivalently about affirmative action, says Thomas is simply inconsistent.
On the one hand, he tells people, be quiet, pull your socks up, don't be so thin-skinned, get on with it. At the same time, from his battle over his confirmation, one will recall, of course, this is a high-tech lynching, to now sort of bemoaning the plight of black people who, in his view, are going to be diminished by affirmative action. There is this sort of interesting conservative resort to sort of victim status.
Stanford Law Professor Pam Carlin picks up that theme.
He does feel that he is a victim. And the interesting thing is he feels himself more to be a victim of affirmative action than he feels himself to have been a victim in the first instance of a historical system that virtually guaranteed that as a black man in Georgia he was going to grow up poor and treated badly by the system.
Other critics see the Thomas dissent as contrary to the justice's own professed view that courts should not make policy decisions. University of Chicago law professor David Strauss is editor of the Supreme Court Review.
On the one hand, it was really a cry from the heart. On the other hand, I thought coming from a justice who often emphasizes the importance of judicial restraint, I thought it was remarkable how he seemed to be quite unaware that the fact that he finds affirmative action personally objectionable, which of course he's entitled to do, doesn't necessarily mean that the University of Michigan or some other unit of government should be barred from reaching a different conclusion.
Indeed, the Thomas view, as expressed in his dissent, is that there is no reason for states to have law schools at all, much less very good ones that will attract the best and the brightest. It is a view that, as always with Justice Thomas, has provoked a lot of talk. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.